Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, good morning to the United States. Good afternoon to Britain and Europe. Good evening to Australia and some of Asia. I think that's how it works. Welcome to Free Association. It's quite a loose show today. I've got a little bit of something organized to play, and I wanted to do a show about Havana Syndrome. I don't really know anything about Havana Syndrome, so I just looked it up on Wikipedia, basically. But I found this video on YouTube, which is Joseph Farrell talking about Havana Syndrome and commenting on an article in the Jerusalem Post. So I've got that to play and Wikipedia to read, and that's as far as my research has gone so far. I've also got to talk a little bit about my week and what I've been doing along the way. So let's do that first, and then we can get into the meaty stuff in about 5 minutes or so. So I had a conversation in the chat room with Ireland. Was it two days ago, I think now? 2 days ago. And he was talking about a project he's working on in New Zealand. And I thought it was a good idea. So I've set up something similar for the UK and Europe and potentially for North America as well. I mean, it depends who wants to use it, if anybody does use it or whatever. But it's a job site. It's a job listing site for people who are unvaccinated. or for companies that are looking for people who are unvaccinated. So that's the idea. I thought it's a good idea. It's something that's needed. It's going to be needed for at least the next 4 or 5 years as a minimum as we go through all this nonsense that's going on. All the political maneuvering and social maneuvering that's going on means that I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm not vaccinated. I've got no plans to be vaccinated. And I need as much of an income as anybody else. So my reasoning is that if we come up with an economy between us, then it reduces the danger. It reduces the potential threat from the outside world. So that's the theory. I've set up a job site anyway. In fact, I've set up two up to now and potentially another one. So if you want to have a look, just give me some feedback because I've only just done this. The first one I set up was, it's a website I've had for a couple of years, but it hasn't really done anything. I haven't done anything with it. Actually, it's about a year. So almost exactly a year ago, I set up shadowplay.live when I was looking at doing another show on a different station, just to play with formats and things. I set up shadowplay.live. The show was going to be called Shadowplay at that particular point. I changed my mind all the time, though. But it's still, the website's still there. So I'll put a job site on the front page of it, which means you can list vacancies. And potentially, if I add one or two things I can add to it, which would be the ability to take applications on there as well. So that means it would be more of an agency type site. And I would have to charge people for that. But job listings at the moment are free. There's the option to sign up as a member of the site, but that's been there for a couple of years anyway. So, and there's no obligation to it. You can just post your jobs and then it'll happen the way it happens from there. If anybody gets in touch, they get in touch, but hopefully they'll mention the website as they do so. And that's the idea, to stimulate the unvaccinated economy, the unvaccinated ecosystem, and see if we can maintain something at a reasonably stable level for the next 5 years, let's say. We call it a five-year plan, for lack of a better phrase. Until things calm down and things get a bit more integrated and a bit more sensible, and the government start being a bit more sensible about vaccines, basically. If that ever happens. If it doesn't happen, then at least there's an ecosystem sitting there that we can use. And obviously I need to generate an income from it if I can, because I'm not working at the moment and I'm relying on universal credit, the welfare system in the UK. Nobody seems to want to give me a telesales job at the moment for whatever reason. So I'm just biding my time, waiting to see what happens. I think I'd rather work for myself anyway, if I'm honest about it. So I'm not very good at taking orders from people now. I'm getting to that point in life where I can see through management in kitchen companies now. I can see right through them. And I prefer to be working for myself and kind of some kind of media role or some kind of agency role. Seems like it's the way forward. I'm looking at doing some kind of administration work or production work in a radio context, but I don't know whether that'll happen or not. I'm just waiting to see. There's a couple of things happened. Well, this morning I had a conversation with a guy at the local soup kitchen, which is just up the way, about 5 minutes from me. And I've been talking to him about podcasting and about the radio shows that I do. And he's offered to put a call out to the volunteers up there to see if they can get me a decent microphone and potentially a mixing desk if there's anything that anybody's got access to that they don't need, then it'll come in my direction. So that's a good thing. They also last weekend offered to list my podcast on the Facebook page up there. So the connections I've made up there over the last 3 years or so are starting to be quite positive now. And they've got basic functional stuff going on up there. It's a good operation, though. It's been around for 35 years, this particular soup kitchen. It's more of a community centre type place than just a soup kitchen. There's a lot of welfare activity goes on up there. They used to have movie afternoons up there, things like that. And they go on walks in the summer. They go on walks up on the Northumberland coast and take the people who use the soup kitchen with them. So it's all very community-based. It's like being in the 1970s up there. It's very huggy and very open and very supportive, which is the way I like things. It's the way I like it. And I needed the food for a long time. I don't need it quite so much now, but there was a point where I did. And I got quite isolated and went into a bit of a downer about stuff. So that's one of the places that's brought me out of my isolation over the last 3 years or so. Because it got a bit depressive for a while. But I'm doing all right at the minute, so I'm not going to complain about it. But the soup kitchen does a good job. They're doing 260 meals a night, which is a lot. In the world that I live in, that's a lot of food, and it's a busy, busy place. Anyway, so that's what I've been up to. So now on to the business of Havana syndrome. As I said, I didn't know anything about Havana syndrome at all. This morning I found this video. Actually, I'll play the video first. I think that's probably the best way to do it. So it's started about 2 minutes in, I think. Share my screen.
Highlined October 17th, so not too long ago. And this is a story that interests me, and the story is getting deeper. And I want to read some of this article. In fact, a great deal of it, toward the very end, because this is the only article I've seen about this whole story that really tries to nail down a pattern and to do some analysis. And the analysis that Mr. Franzman gives here is rather disturbing. I tend to agree with most of it. Where I depart is the whodunit, okay? And we'll get back to that. Because the whodunit part includes a little known thing that I've written that most people don't know about. So this news and views is a little bit of a commercial. All right. So anyway, let's begin with the article. The article's titled Havana Syndrome Attacks Reveal U.S. Adversaries May Have Dangerous Intelligence. Okay. And I'm going to read just a couple of paragraphs from the very beginning of this thing, and then a lot of paragraphs toward the very end of the article. In fact, I'm going to be reading you about half the article before I show you this bit of writing that most people have overlooked and point out some things about it and some things that I think you should bear in mind reading Mr. Franzman's article. Anyway, he starts out, quote, "A suspected case of Havana syndrome was detected in Colombia last week, the most recent in a series of suspicious attacks that appear to target U.S. diplomatic and intelligence personnel. This latest incident appeared to happen just days before the visit of the U.S. Secretary of State. What this means is that these attacks may be targeted and timed, that they are not random, and that a powerful adversary of the U.S. is using them systematically. The U.S. Embassy staff in Bogota may have been injured by the mysterious illness, which causes a painful sound in the ear, fatigue, and dizziness, the BBC reports. First reported in Cuba in 2016, U.S. diplomats around the world have since reported cases of the syndrome. Its origins are unknown. No, they're not. But we'll get back to that. With some speculating, it is a type of weapon. Gee, you think? Anyway, in August, U.S. officials said the Vietnam leg of U.S. Vice President Ayatollah Kamala Harris' South Asia trip had to be delayed by a few hours due to reports of two U.S. diplomatic personnel coming down with a mysterious combination of ailments that have come to be known as Havana syndrome. Skipping one little bit here, experts believe, and folks, I said this when the story first appeared, I said this was what was going on. Experts believe that microwave energy apparently directed, concentrated, and aimed at the victims could be responsible. The victims themselves described several types of harm. Well, duh. That's exactly what I think is going on. But anyway, so let's get to Mr. Frontzman's analysis and why he sets this out. And folks, this is probably the longest portion of an article I've ever read before, because I think what he does here is very good. I want you to pay attention to it. But he comes to a particular conclusion, which, again, I'm not disagreeing with the conclusion. I'm simply disagreeing with the possibility that the conclusion is so limited, all right? Because Havana syndrome is not the first time in history we've heard reports like this, believe it or not, and it's not the first time this type of microwave, a presumed microwave weapon has been used. All right, so here we go. He says, so what do we know? Intelligence officials say they have not gathered enough information to say with any confidence what is causing the injuries or who is to blame. But they say Russia remains a leading suspect. Of course, if there's something bad going on in the world, it's Russia. And multiple sources familiar with the matter said that intelligence agencies are increasingly focusing on a theory that the injuries have been caused by some sort of directed energy based on their own analysis of the evidence. The larger context, however, is that this has happened as the U.S. has begun to confront what it calls near-peer adversaries as part of a new national defense strategy. This means the U.S. is shifting its focus from counterterrorism in the Middle East to confronting Russia and China. To a lesser extent, it has also been seeking to confront Iran. The question about the Havana syndrome is interesting because it raises questions about how U.S. adversaries seem to have caught Americans in the back foot in various countries. The fact that the alleged weapon and attacks appear to target not just random U.S. diplomatic personnel, but rather key facilities just prior to key visits by officials and also appear to target the CIA means the adversaries seem to have knowledge of the layout of the U.S. diplomatic posts and also about who is based at them and when. Now, let me stop there. This is something I said way back when I first blogged about the Havana attacks in Havana, Cuba, that if you're relying on a microwave weapon, number one, and in my opinion, probably a microwave interferometry weapon. In other words, you've got two sources beaming microwave energy, and it's the interferometry pattern that you're really aiming to create. And to do that, you're creating it in a certain region. So in other words, what I'm saying is in that kind of putative energy weapon, you have to know where a person is likely to be at a particular time in order to create that pattern in that area. Because you recall many people in the Havana syndrome reported that they heard this while they were laying in bed, they get up and they leave the region of the bed and the signal or whatever it is that they're hearing disappears completely. So that's one of the things I said early out of the box. They had to have knowledge, in other words, of the internal layout of the embassy itself and who was going to be where at particular times. So that's a key point here. This is something that Mr. Franzman is stressing, and I think absolutely he's correct, because what he's pointing out here, to have that kind of intelligence, you have to have people on the inside, and your intelligence has to be very, very good. To continue, the attacks appeared to begin in Havana, where the Obama administration was seeking to renew ties. Why would a U.S. enemy seek to target Americans there? Was it because this was a friendly country of the adversary state and that the enemy's intelligence assets who were moving around an experimental or new microwave weapon could operate freely and experiment to see what it did? Is it because the U.S. had reopened an embassy in Cuba in 2015 and the locals or the powerful adversary might have advanced knowledge of the building? What happened in Havana may provide some insight. In 2015, the newly reopened U.S. embassy situated on Havana's seaside Malecon Boulevard was a sought-after posting, with diplomats jockeying to serve in a country where American foreign intelligence officers were making history as the U.S. and Cuba repaired long-frayed diplomatic ties. But U.S. diplomats in their homes and hotel rooms in Havana began experiencing unexplained symptoms such as dizziness and pounding headaches. These sometimes were accompanied by an unidentified piercing directional noise that sounded as if metal was being scraped across a floor. 24 diplomats were affected. CNN noted that according to a timeline in the State Department report, the CIA informed the State Department in September of 2017 of its decision to withdraw its personnel from Havana for the foreseeable future. This means it is possible that the adversary operating the weapon was targeting the CIA in Havana. U.S. diplomats and their intelligence counterparts left the country in 2017. Now, Berlin police are also probing yet another claim of Havana syndrome after several people at the U.S. embassy reported the trauma. This adds Germany to the list of countries where the incidents happened, besides Cuba, Colombia, Vietnam, India, Austria, Taiwan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, the United Kingdom, Georgia, Poland, China, and Russia. Remember, we've had Havana syndrome reports in China, and in fact, it was the Chinese reporting that some of their people inside of some facility in China reported this. So continuing, if we look at those countries, what connects them? And this is where the argument starts to go a little weak. Russia and China are U.S. adversaries and want the U.S. to leave those Central Asian states which were once linked to the Soviet Union. Vietnam has links to Russia and China. Georgia and Poland are neighbors of Russian allies. And Taiwan is next to China. But what about Austria, Germany, Colombia, and the United Kingdom? Colombia is close to Venezuela, which is a U.S. adversary. Foreign intelligence services have targeted dissidents in the United Kingdom in the past. Vienna was often known during the Cold War as a place where intelligence services operated against one another. Overall, however, the list shows that whoever is doing this can seemingly operate with impunity in both advanced, powerful Western states as well as and in poorer states across the world. These American enemies seem to have advanced knowledge of U.S. official trips and where U.S. diplomats and intelligence agents are located. Embassy buildings may be large, and it would be easy to target several rooms with microwave weapons or other complex technological means, knowing which rooms one wants to target. It also means that the device that is doing this likely has a decent range and is lightweight and can be moved easily. Now, that one I agree with it. That is because it is not reasonable to conclude that in all these cases, the adversary secured a building near the local U.S. embassy or near other U.S. posts. A weapon like this could be mobile, secured in some kind of truck or van, but that it would also raise suspicions if parked near an embassy. It's not clear why the local countries hosting the U.S. personnel have not detected suspicious activity. It is also not clear why the U.S. hasn't built a capability to detect and counter such a threat. Okay? Now, it's that last part that indicates we're not dealing with just your ordinary, if it is a microwave broadcast technology of some sort, that we're not dealing with just your typical run-of-the-mill. Now, why is all this interesting to me? Because you'll notice one of the threads that's running throughout that Jerusalem Post article is that someone is targeting the United States, and he's kind of very gingerly hinting that it's an adversary of the U.S., and namely, in this context, I think he's hinting at or suggesting Russia or China. Now, Russia, if you've investigated this type of microwave interferometry, mind manipulation technology, Russia has certainly been experimenting with this stuff ever since Soviet days, and according to all reports, was rather successful with it. So you can't rule out Russia. You cannot rule out China, all right? And by the same token, this technology really isn't all that difficult. So you can't rule out basically any technologically sophisticated power here. But I'm going to suggest something that, again, is going to seem off the wall, because my suggestion is going to come out of any sort of context. Most people are familiar with my books, okay? What most people reading my books are not familiar with is that on a couple of occasions, I've written essays for other books that are nothing but collections of essays, all right? And one of those books was this book called Secret and Suppressed, Banned Ideas and Hidden History. And as you can see here, it's edited by the late Jim Keith. And I wrote a portion of this book. And the thing that I want to read to you, this was published by Farrell House. And it was published in, 1993. Okay. That was the first volume. This volume was published somewhat later, I think. It was published in 1993. So this is a very, very early publication, even, in fact, before I started my series of books. So this is long before Havana Syndrome. And I'm citing from my essay here on page 285. And I want you to listen very carefully, because the whole article is precisely about this kind of microwave ultrasonic mind manipulation and, incidentally, technology that can be used for other purposes. And I want to read just a portion of this to give you a suggestive idea. Quote, the ultrasonic equipment, could you explain what this is, a possible description of the equipment and how it is used? I have never seen the equipment, but from the conversations, and I'm quoting a document here, by the way, folks, I have never seen the equipment, but from the conversations that I have developed, the equipment sounds a bit like it's compact. It could be in the seat of a pickup truck or a service truck, which indeed it was in the Chicago example. And the actual evidence that delivered these highly directed waves is through an arrangement where you could direct it, point it like a, they have these guns that you can direct for sound. Now, for the Siemens company, their main work is more than just fortunate. A principal facility of Siemens, a facility dealing in ultrasonics, is located very close to, and I'm not going to give that little detail away, you'll have to go read it. The device I mentioned could be on the seat of a car or pickup truck. The power requirements are relatively large for it. The power requirements were drawn from the ground equipment. So in other words, what I'm suggesting to you is this technology, the basic technology that they are describing in this Jerusalem Post article, is a technology that's been around for a while and has been allegedly used and even used for other purposes. Now, who may be doing it? I'm going to suggest to you that it's possible that we're looking at nation state actors, or because this technology is so easy to make, you could be looking at a number of non-state actors. Remember what I said in Microcosm and Medium, my book on mind manipulation technology. Remember what I said there. This technology has, in my opinion, long ago entered private and corporate hands. So it could be almost anybody with a vested interest in heightening tensions between the United States and its adversaries, and for that matter, even heightening tensions between the United States and its allies. So we could be dealing with anybody here, Russia, China, you know, fascist internationals, Israel itself, who knows? I don't know. But I think the thing is, while we're dealing with Havana syndrome, I think the Jerusalem Post article is correct. We need to look for patterns in it, as the author of the article did. But I think we have to keep an eye open for these patterns may indicate something of the nature of who's behind these attacks inevitably. So anyway, that I wanted to bring to your attention. I'm sorry, folks. I haven't even been paying attention to what's been going on in the chat room. Yeah, Mossad. Someone mentioned Mossad. That could.
Okay, so that's probably the important bit of the Joseph Farrell stream. It's a recent one. It's from yesterday. So obviously, I'm new to Havana syndrome, and I'm quite new to microwave weapons as well, so I don't really know enough to comment on it, but I found it interesting. It's something I'm going to put on my list of things to research, which is a long list now. When I get round to it, I'll do another show, and we'll see where we go from there. I can't see why this wouldn't be a thing, though. I mean, it's possible to do lots of things with frequencies, and anything that can be used to heal can be used to damage people as well. That's the way my head works. I know for a fact that that energy work can be used to damage people, and I know for a fact that energy work can be used to heal people. It depends on the intention of the person and the consciousness of the person who's doing the work, what the end result is, and the interaction between the two people, or the two energy fields, is what makes it happen. So you've either got a positive constructive interference pattern or a destructive interference pattern going on, and it is what it is. It's from the perspective of somebody who's got it happening to them, it's a destructive interference pattern, but from the position of somebody else, it might be constructive. Who knows? It's a difficult thing to assess. So I need to investigate and put together a framework for looking at these things. I haven't really got a framework for these things because I've mainly been looking at philosophy and healing from a personal perspective, and now I'm looking at things in the world that are related as like kind of aspects and uses of frequency, but I don't have a context. I don't have enough of a framework to really assess it properly. So I'll put my hands up and say, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with this, but it's probably a thing. It's probably a thing that's been used for a while. And there's many different ways you can influence somebody's body, one of which is by thought. So thought wouldn't necessarily produce ringing in the ears, but it could potentially produce a headache or tightness or muscle aches or something like that. You can do that with thought. Any kind of negative thought against somebody is potentially going to be picked up telepathically or subconsciously, and and translate it into something in their body. If they can't deal with it, they'll push it into their body, because that's the way my model works anyway. If there's something comes in telepathically that I don't want to be conscious of, my understanding of it, or if there's some emotion that I don't want to deal with, it gets pushed into my body. My body's basically my subconscious mind at this point. So that's the model that I use to investigate these things. I'm going to have to clarify a few things before I can say definitively what's going on with Havana syndrome, or even get close to it. So I'll investigate it. I'll put it on my list. But it's just one of the things that's on the list. So let's move on a little bit. I had a piece from Dark Horse podcast lined up, so I'll just find that again. There's a couple of clips that I was thinking about using. So that's this one. So the Dark Horse podcast is a weekly live stream. They do a live stream on YouTube and they do a live stream on Odyssey. This is Brett Weinstein and Heather Heyer, who are evolutionary biologists. I like it. They're good people. They know their field, and they're prepared to analyze stuff live as they go along. They're really thinking out loud, and I like that. I like the way that works. I like the idea of thinking out loud. So here's a piece from podcast number 100.
An Australian paper, the Courier Mail, I'm not sure, I think it may be Brisbane, although I'm not actually positive where in Australia it's coming out of. The headline, this is from 6 days ago, the headline is, "Don't freak out, catching COVID after you are vaccinated improves immunity." Subheadline, "If you are fully vaccinated against COVID, the next step to improve your immunity may be to actually catch the virus." Now, at first pass, this looks like complete lunacy and looks like they're just, you know, throwing up their arms and, you know, saying anything they feel like saying at any moment, because that has certainly not been the approach in the past. There is also built into this the idea that we are hearing, but I have yet to see any data to support the idea of quote unquote super immunity, wherein the acquired immunity you get from the actual disease is enhanced by also getting the vaccine. And now they're arguing vice versa, like that there is some enhanced immunity from actually having both exposures as opposed to just having had the disease versus just having had the vaccine. Put that aside for a moment, whether or not that is true or not. It's hard to imagine what the immunological mechanism might be, but you know, you think not? Okay.
Oh, I think it is almost certain that this is true at some tiny level.
At some tiny level.
Yeah.
Okay. But you know, that actually doesn't necessarily matter here. What does matter is if in Australia, a country that has been going, you know, guns blazing on everyone absolutely must get vaccinated, if what they're saying is, and, you know, again, another thing that this is hinging on is the idea that having been vaccinated, we're now admitting that actually it doesn't really stop transmission very much. But what they are saying is that it will reduce the impact of the disease on you. Maybe true, maybe not. But if that is the case, they're saying, look, you're going to run into the disease. They're basically assuming endemism. You're going to run into the disease. Just deal with it. You'll be fine. Now, you aren't necessarily going to be fine. There are people who've died after getting COVID, after having been fully vaccinated. And there are lots and lots of people who get COVID who do just fine, right? It has an incredibly variable effect on people. But to me, what this says, if we are to take it at face value, is, okay, then, vaccinated or not, you're going to run into this. What we need is early treatment. What we need is to use the wide array of drugs that we have available to us to deal with treating people as they show up. And hey, it looks like vaccinated people and unvaccinated people are both likely to run into this. And really, there's no reason to be pitting those populations against one another in the political sphere, in the media, unless what you are doing does not have anything to do with public health or about COVID at all. Unless what you were trying to do is create division among populations.
Create division among populations or sell one product.
Yes. And, you know, I don't know enough about the recent politics in Australia to know, but if that headline came out in the US, I would be responding with, okay, clearly we've moved from Trump derangement syndrome to COVID derangement syndrome. And there's just, there's no ability to have a conversation about this that has nuance that says, terrible virus, terrible disease, let's figure out how best to move forward, because actually we have shared fate here, people.
Yeah. I would add to your list of things we should obviously be doing, you know, the elephant in the room increasingly is properly preparing with vitamin D, for example, right? Right. This is the lowest hanging fruit on the tree, and yet we don't recommend it, which suggests that we are not actually all that concerned at the public health level. We are apparently either completely inept or not that concerned about your actual health, and we're doing other things.
I would say, I mean, so obviously adding things to a list that is the simplest makes it less simple, but the three maybe top things on my list of what a country or a world that was actually interested in public health in light of this particular virus and disease would be to encourage supplementation of vitamin D in any population where they are likely to be deficient in it, which is to say the higher latitudes you're higher latitudes you're at, and the more likely you are to be spending time inside, which also correlates. That's one. Recommending that people go outside, that people spend time outside, that people get their exercise outside, that people socialize outside, yep. Not just for vitamin D reasons, but because this virus isn't transmitting outside still. And then third, and this does take resources and it does take money and it will take time, but in improving the filtration systems of indoor air, because in, you know, the smaller the space you're in with other people, the more likely are that you are breathing in air that they have exhaled. This is part of why, this is a big part of why this virus, and like all respiratory viruses, are more likely to spread inside. So we need to be focusing on filtration, and, you know, airlines are doing it. And yes, those are very small spaces and very, you know, very easy to control, but we have the technology and it will take some time. It will take some money, but this is the way to make people more safe going forward.
Every tool at our disposal, mm-hmm. It really ought to be. All right. So if we can return for a second to the question of where we are, we've got something that masquerades as consensus, but mm-hmm. The point is, whatever that thing is, it is coercion dependent consensus. The implication of it is roughly the opposite of an actual consensus. It's closer to a hostage video in which somebody says some things because there's a gun pointed at them. Mm-hmm. It is also, you know, we've heard Chomsky's phrase, the manufacture of consent is resonant. But there's a way in which we are seeing the inverse of many things. And even though it's an easy extrapolation, we don't get the implication. And so the manufacture of consent is the mirror image of the destruction of dissent, which is what we are seeing. Those who dissent about either, you know, sex and gender issues and claim that there's some substantial difference between males and females, mm-hmm. right? Or those who claim things against the public health narrative are punished severely, resulting in a much tinier number of people willing to say these things out loud. And in fact, lots of people will lie to themselves. So, you know, the destruction of dissent is key to how this works. So I'm not sure how much more there is to say. I did have a thought about, in light of the role that we have seen played by YouTube in particular, it did occur to me that there is room for us to do YouTube a favor. And we've done a little pro bono work generating a slogan for the people who generate the community guidelines. And the slogan is going to be something like YouTube community guidelines, because you can't handle the truth.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All right. I think that works.
Okay. That's a Dark Horse podcast. It's from live stream number 100. I have time to play one more of those, I think, just about. I'll find a clip that's about 10 minutes long, and we're good to go. And it's going to jump around a little bit, so let's do this again. Okay, this is Dark Horse again.
We are seeing the evolution of a new type of cancel culture, or the way it actually looks to me, and I think to us, is it's the exact same tactics of the cancel culture that we encountered with respect to wokeism, mm-hmm. applied in a totally different context, applied in a scientific context. And it's very jarring because many of the people who, you know, understood completely what was going on in the case of wokeism have switched sides and are now doing the canceling, right? And that is a very disturbing phenomenon, because for one thing, you would imagine once you've seen the playbook and it's been aimed at you, that you would be almost immune to deploying that playbook against anybody else on any topic. And you would actually say to yourself something like, well, if I was in the right, why is this playbook even necessary? Right? Being in the right gives you a lot of advantage in the world of scientific arguments. It should not be necessary to deploy these absolutely draconian tools.
Yeah. Why cheat if truth is on your side?
Yeah. Why do you need to cheat? Right. And of course, you know, the first answer that will be given is because their lives at stake. And so basically the implication is that this is a noble lie. On the other hand, how much does it look like a noble lie? If it was a noble lie, wouldn't you tack on to these draconian bits of nonsense? Hey, why don't you get yourself some vitamin D? Mm-hmm. Right. If this was a noble lie that was really about an obsession with protecting people's health, there's lots of stuff that we would be doing that we're not. So maybe this isn't a noble lie. It's just a lie. Mm-hmm. Right. But in any case, this is another place where we're looking at the mirror image of something. The destruction of dissent is a mirror image of the manufacture of consent. And in this case, we know it is written into the DNA of the West, as it were, that the free exchange of ideas, which is encoded in the concept of free speech, is very, very important, right? And the problem is that it is also easily caricatured, because it sounds like, oh, you want your speech rights, right? You really want to be heard? You're an attention whore, right? No, free speech is important because it's how we hash out what's true and what's best, what we should do. And so the point is, there's a whole slew of attacks that aren't really about your ability to speak. They're about whether anybody can choose to hear you, right? Mm-hmm. Interfering with people's ability to find you. If there's a large audience that wants to hear what you have to say, and it just so happens that the people who own the platform that dictates whether or not they can find you don't like what you're saying. And the point is, well, you can still speak, but they can't hear you, mm-hmm. right? So anyway, we need at least...
Speaking into a manufactured void, which is rather like a manufactured consensus, speaking into a manufactured void is not what the framers of the Constitution had in mind when they were protecting free speech.
Oh my goodness. It's like speech-canceling headphones. Mm-hmm. Speak all you want, and the headphones render it silent. Yeah. So somehow people need to be aware that it is actually the real right that is important is the right to choose what is worth listening to, which doesn't mean I'm choosing it because I agree with it. Maybe I want to hear it to find out whether I agree with it.
Right.
You know, maybe that's how I find out that I disagree with it, rather than effectively being told you can't hear this because you disagree with it.
Right. And that, you know, that's not new here, right? Like, you drive underground actual hate speech and it empowers it, because people will do it outside of anyone's sight, and then it will emerge at some point later, you know, far better armed, frankly. So I think just to rephrase what you've just said, there should never be a compunction to speak, just as there should not be a compunction to listen. So, you know, compelled speech, we know, isn't appropriate. Compelled listening also isn't isn't either. Some people have been confused about this. They're both anathema to a free society. And so as you have just said, there should always be freedom to speak. There should also always be freedom to listen, especially in this era of the virtual public square, because that's the era we live in, the virtual public square, to which you may not know how to show up, because, you know, we're here for now at, you know, noon 30 Pacific time on Saturdays, most Saturdays. But how would you find us if you didn't know that, right? So providing to fact checkers who are, it's just a modern word for censors, who think they're doing you a service, the ability to say, yeah, you know, they can talk all they want, but we're not going to let anyone find them, is a, you know, frankly, a disingenuous response that is exactly antithetical to what the framers of the founders of this country had in mind.
Right. And, you know, of course, imagine the Constitution if you actually had to spell all of this out, right?
Right.
Right. You know, okay, what are we going to do if there's ever an era in which there's something called fact checkers who look for misinformation, where misinformation doesn't mean it's not a fact,
right?
Right. And there's a capacity for noise canceling to render speech useless and unhearable. Yeah, it's an endless arms race. And really the point is, the basic principle is still the same, and it either applies or it doesn't. Yes. And we are stuck with a whole bunch of brand new bottlenecks that are being exerted to, I don't know, to shape our behavior.
Okay, I think that's enough of the Dark Horse podcast for now. That was two clips from live stream number 100. And it reminds me that I've just done my 200th podcast this week, which is a bit of a milestone in itself. So the podcast's doing all right. People are spreading the word for me a little bit here and there. So it's kind of got its own momentum. As long as I keep producing the content, I think it'll work all right. So if you do want to get in touch with me online, then I'm on Twitter, and my name is Dennis Barker. It's Dennis with two N's and Barker with a B. I've been on Twitter since the day it was launched, which is why I got the name. My actual name rather than a name with extra letters in and numbers or whatever. So I've been there for a long time. I don't use it all that much, but you can direct message me there if you want to. There's also a live voice chat facility on Twitter that I've been looking at a little bit. I'm going to experiment with it and see what I can do with it. They haven't got a recording facility on there at the moment, but they're adding that in the future. So as soon as they add a recording facility, then I've potentially got a place to record a podcast, as well as Podbean, which is where I record them at the moment. You can find me on Podbean if you've got that app. Radioprojects.podbean.com is the podcast. I do pop-up shows there. There's no schedule, so you can just open a voice room and do a radio show, and the audience shows up from the people who are online. It's an interesting app. I quite like it. I was testing Clubhouse as well this week, which is another voice room type app. Clubhouse is a bit more large scale. Podbean's small scale. Clubhouse is large scale, and the culture seems to be very different. Podbean's very much a community. It's quite supportive. There's some trolls on there, but there are trolls in any community, so you would kind of expect that. But there are also some very supportive people on there as well. I found some good people on Podbean. And one of them does a show with me on Tuesday mornings now, the Roundtable. So I'll give the Roundtable a plug. If you've never heard it before, you can find it in the archives. There's three shows in the archives now, and it's developing as it goes along. I've had a couple of people show up as kind of guests, one-off guests, but I'm looking for people who want to be regulars on there. It's 4 a.m. on Tuesday mornings in the States is when the roundtable happens. It's 9 a.m. UK time. It's 10 a.m. Amsterdam time. I've got the guy I was talking about comes on from Amsterdam. So if you're in the UK or Europe, you're welcome to message me on Skype or on Twitter. On Skype, I'm Open Philosopher Dennis Barker. You'll find me that way. There's two accounts on Skype. So message me on both accounts and just say Tuesday round table in the title so that I know that you're not some kind of spam bot person. I'm not really interested in spam bots, so I don't pay any attention to long strings of random numbers and letters on Skype. I just block everything unless it's got a person attached to it. Well, you can get in touch with me that way, and you're welcome to. As I'm on Rev Radio twice a week, but I do need people to interview. I do need people to talk to on the round table. I'm looking for people with interesting ideas to share, interesting perspectives on life, interesting experience of life, the universe, and everything. Doesn't have to be what my perspective is. You can be coming from a completely different perspective. I can still have a conversation with you, and it might be a more interesting conversation because we come from very different places. So that if you are interested in coming on to the round table on a regular basis, get in touch with me. If you want to be interviewed for the Saturday show, I'm happy to have a conversation with you, and then we'll set something up for that. If we can, if the timing's good, if not, I'll record something. We're all being well. I'll see you on Tuesday for the round table, and I'll see you on Saturday for Free Association on the Saturday afternoon my time, 11 o'clock Eastern. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Be evasive. But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came and unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
What the heck is the truth, jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at... Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.